This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Eita, welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politics, coming to you from Discover TV in Bryanston, Johannesburg. Actually, four ways, Johannesburg. Look up Discover TV, Discover without an E at the end, Discover with just an R there at the end. Discover TV, incredible studio, incredible facility. Check out Discover TV. I'm not alone, always with my partner in rhyme and crime and grime. Botsang Modimami Muilwa is in the building.
Yes, Brother Fesh, good morning. Good morning to you and the followers and
yes,
viewers.
Mm.
You know, when I used to watch movies in the old days,
yes,
I used
sir.
To tell people some like drama, some comedy. I used to like what they called action-packed thriller drama.
Yes, sir.
And this week
so,
on geopolitics.
So, Nolomuto Arashwasnega.
No, that was not really thriller. It was just action.
Now, and in fact, we were raised more on Clint Eastwood.
Yes, yes.
Terence Hill and Bud Spencer.
Bud Spencer.
Bruce Lee. Bruce,
yeah, that's me.
Leaf and Cliff.
Well, you understand.
Exactly.
Then after that generation came the generation of the Schwarzeneggers, but I'm more of a Steven Seagal person. He's more real life, and there's drama nyana there.
Yeah.
But anyway, this week on geopolitics, bro, it's packed.
In fact, but I think let's start at Bra Tito Mboweni's funeral.
Yes, yes.
And in fact, I don't think in the history of September, October, over the last 30 years, have there been as many deaths as there have been this year?
Yeah, and you know, there's so many deaths of young people, people in their 40s and 50s, 60s, prominent people.
Mm.
And I mean, with the passing of Tito Mboweni as the first Minister of Labour, coincidentally, this week, another former Minister of Labour,
Member TC,
and that day Member TC
Ndadlana
passed on as well. You know,
rest in peace, sir.
Yes, may his soul rest in peace. One of the politicians that I respected, very humble person,
and very unassuming. Aitulete, doing things in his lane, bothered no one.
Bothered nobody. Came into the public service, did his job, left the public service.
Yeah.
No scandals, nothing. You know, and those are the kind of leaders like Member Chisi that we wanted. But last week when our show, when we were on air, it was also coincided with the funeral of Ntate Mboweni.
So do you believe the story we're getting about President Thabo Mbeki and the fact that the program did not allow for him to be a part of the program? Or was he snubbed? Because it wouldn't make sense why a former president that served with Bra Tito,
two terms, yes, too important of his career,
would not be allowed to speak because of time, but other friends would be allowed to speak. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't, but especially that what we are being told is that the family had actually conveyed a message to President Mbeki that Mr. Mboweni Tito had said, in one of his statements or whatever that he had told the family, should he pass on, he would like President Mbeki to be one of the people who speaks at the funeral. And they conveyed that message, and he prepared a speech. I don't think it was about time, because why wouldn't you have time for somebody that the deceased has said must speak at my funeral?
Absolutely.
One, two, this is a statesman, you understand, an elder of the ANC, and Tito has served two important terms under him. You understand, one,
and they made things happen together.
Exactly. So I don't know why would and this was a state funeral. So obviously the state would have
relinquished control.
Everything to the state. Yeah, but why would the state, especially in President Ramaphosa's protocol team, because normally such will be handled by the state protocol team, leave President Mbeki out? But this is where I also saw the maturity of President Mbeki.
Yes, sir.
By just dismissing this as I respect what they said, and my foundation will release the statement after which he did. That's where you see maturity. Actually, President Mbeki has never been a person of squabbles here in Owatin, except when it comes to JZ. When it comes to Jacob Zuma, he doesn't hold the barrel. But, on all other things, he doesn't get into what I call cheap politicking and public spats.
Okay, in a nutshell, was he snubbed, yes or no?
No. I don't think he was snapped. I think there may have been a reason. Him being the former president, not from him, from the state, to say he may overshadow the head of state, President Ramaphosa, the current head of state, if that happens. I'm thinking diplomatically, it may have created an impression that, and you know, President Mbeki is an orator. He writes well, he speaks well. Yes. And President Ramaphosa is not that, you know, as a person. So you try to manage such, you know, clumsy things to happen because he was going to ride over him. And I think they took a diplomatic decision to say, no, we can't have two leaders of the ANC. One is a former president, another one is a sitting president, to share the platform. That's the only reason I can think about. And whether he was told prior or in the last minute or he was removed from the program, that's the part we'll never know. But I don't think he was upset, because if he was upset, he would have mentioned it. President Mbeki doesn't hold things back. He would have mentioned it, that this thing was handled in a clumsy way and he's not appreciating it. I think him being told, the timing is also important. You know, being told in the morning of the event, that's clumsy.
Yeah.
That's something that could have been handled better.
Absolutely. We move on?
Yes, let's move on.
The EFF are in the news this week.
Yes.
Amongst other reasons the EFF are in the news is the suggestion that the millions of rands that are being used to repatriate undocumented foreigners could be better spent.
Yeah.
And why not rather spend that money legitimizing these foreign nationals' stay in the country, amongst other things?
Yes.
That is a waste of money that we almost 60 million has been spent already.
In 5 months.
Yeah.
You know, we are not even half, and you know, the financial year of government starts the 1st of April. We are not yet, have we only joined the half term, but in 5 months, almost 60 million has been spent on that. Listen, Fresh, you know what I've said before? The EFF in the past and towards the elections, they failed to explain to an ordinary person what do they mean about legitimizing foreign nationals and open borders.
Because they failed to manage the narrative that's on the street that the EFF are just saying everyone must just come here.
Yes, they failed to do that. And maybe it is because they were focusing on elections. But for some of us who I went to go and read the election manifesto to check what do they mean by this. One, for my interest in politics. Two, for my interest in border management and the movement of people. And I've said it before to say their position for me is understandable. It makes more sense. Actually, they are the only political party so far that has come with a sensible solution to reality on the ground. And I'll tell you why I think it's sensible. If a country spends 60 million, I can tell it's more than 60 million. 60 million is for those who were repatriated, the so-called illegitimate or undocumented foreign nationals. This 60 million in 5 months, it's for those that we repatriated as a country. There are other costs that we are spending on them. There's others who are criminals, who are murdering, raping people and doing other things. But also, there are those who are at the so-called detention centers, like the one in Mogale City, Lindela. I think it's Lindela. There's Lindela, many in the country. There's one in Mpumalanga and one in Limpopo. In keeping those people in detention centers under humanitarian principles, it costs a whole lot of money because they are not in prison. They are there, they are fed, they get medicine, they are accommodated until, you know, what people don't understand is, for as long as you find somebody on the street and that person cannot identify themselves, either by choice or that I'm refusing to identify myself, or they don't really have documents, the constitution of their country as well as the immigration law prescribes for us as a nation to can keep those people in these detention centers and feed them 3 meals per day. If they get sick, we take care of them while we are determining where they come from. You know, when I was in the service, especially the consular service, what did they used to do others? Somebody will be, for an example, to say, I am from Tanzania while he's from the DRC Congo. Understand? Just to buy time and to frustrate the situation. And if a person says, I'm from Tanzania, the government has a responsibility to consult who? The Tanzanian authorities. to Kenya, is this your citizen? If they say no, we go back. And the person can spend months sitting there. The EFF is saying, because this is costing us so much money, instead of doing this, let us take those who are here, not make them South African citizens, but make them legitimate to be here. In other words, have a database of who is in this country, from where. Are they not wanted in their countries for or globally for criminal activities? Take their fingerprints, photos, names, and their whole database. Them, we must have it as a nation, because for us to keep on taking them out, and then after a week or two, they are back into their country, we keep on taking them out, we are going around the circles and it's costing us money. For me, that makes sense. Otherwise, I haven't heard any other political party that has come with a solution. Others will say Mabahambe, others will say lock them up, throw them out, but throw them out at what expense?
Sure.
And does it work? We've been doing the same thing for years. And I think people must not look at EFF as the second opposition party into their country in parliament. Let them go and table this proposal in parliament and let other political parties look at it in a sense that they want to come with a solution.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody complains about a problem, our borders are porous, illegal immigrants, they're taking jobs and all those things, and you don't come with solution. You don't put possible tangible solutions on the table. And I must say bravo to the EFF. They are coming to propose to say, and you know what? They went further to say this 50 million that we have spent in 5 months. Imagine how much will it be in 1 year, especially when it goes to December, when foreign, you know, illegal nationals wants to go home on holiday. We pay for their holiday. They come back in January. You know what the EFF say? It says the government must take that money and empower, like, the border management authority forces, get drones, register these people, create a database of where you can manage them instead of just transporting them. Use that money to get increase surveillance as well as, you know, an awareness amongst the public as well. There's also an element of there's no awareness amongst our public members. Whenever a person is a foreigner, they don't care whether you are here as a student, medical reasons, or you got a work permit, or you've got asylum, and all. There is no awareness. And EFF is right, actually. Because once this thing mushrooms and it causes violence, it will get out of hand. And for that, I want you to say they should be listened to. And even them, they've got a very nice policy and idea of what to do. Let them get the right people to sell that policy for them or to explain to the nation what do they actually mean in simple words.
And if for any other reason, a database allows you to fully appreciate the strain that infrastructure is taking,
exactly,
that the clinics are taking,
exactly, fresh,
etc.
We have a database of prisoners in South Africa. Why do we have that? We want to know these criminals. Who are they? If they're on parole, they get monitored. Well, it's not at its best, but it is important to know what is happening within your society or the nation. And that's what the EFF is calling for.
The lady that does my laundry is from Lesotho.
Yes.
And her younger brother has been in prison. I don't know what crime they committed. So he's been in prison, I think, for a year or two. And he came out about 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
And then immediately they were released. They were sent straight to Lindela.
Yes.
Because apparently there's a bus that's supposed to take them to Lesotho.
Take them to Maseru Bridge. Yeah.
Exactly. Because there's quite a few of them from Lesotho.
Yes.
But I'm not understanding. I think they had to pay for this bus.
Well, it depends.
To take them home or something like that, because I had to help her pay for her brother to literally leave to go home.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're stuck at Lindela.
Okay, you see, how does it work? The Department of Home Affairs, Lindela, it's managed by Home Affairs.
Yes, sir.
When they move asylum seekers or illegal immigrants back home, or people who have been released from prison for whatever reason, they don't just go on daily basis. They will keep you there until you have been cleared and there's a certain number
of
volume.
Of
there's enough of you to can be moved.
Exactly.
And escorted. You know, if there are hardened criminals who are wanted in America, they even get escorted. So it's a very big exercise. to repatriate them.
Sure.
Now, for those who were in for petty crimes and things like you didn't have your passport or you overstayed in the country, they are given an opportunity to say, I'll go on my own. I don't want any more trouble. Sure. And that could be the case. This young man may be saying, instead of staying at Lindell, I would rather go back home.
Yes,
so in that instance, when the state is not ready, they allow you to go on your own. So they group themselves together and they hire a bus that can take them home. So these are people who are not wanted criminals and who are like overstayed in the country, overstayed.
Or they've served their time already.
Or they've served their time and they're like, instead of staying at Lindell, which is a detention center, I would rather go back home. So it does happen that people organize their own transport to go back home.
In fact, still with the EFF, they've also had quite a bit to say about the ANC in the Free State.
Yes. Look, I'm actually very impressed again with the ANC Free State, you know, leaders. Look, there's been stories in the news about how one business person there has came out in the last 3 weeks, every weekend on media, he confessed that he's a business person, but he bribed the current premier, the current chairperson of the ANC in the Free State, who is a speaker of Mangaung Municipality, and as well as the husband of the premier. And I didn't even know, I got to learn this week that the husband of the premier is actually the speaker of the province.
Oh, yes.
So the premier and the speaker, husband and wife, it's not only in the chambers that they sit next to each other, they've got pillow talks on how to take money from people as well.
Allegedly.
Well, it's allegation, but the other thing is that some of the allegations this business person has made against the speaker, they haven't denied them. They will talk like, no, it was business deals with our daughters and things like that. But the EFF says to the ANC, which I think is the ANC that should have done that because it's their members, this is too much. And these are the people who, under Makgashule's administration in the Free State, they were the opposition inside the same political party, but they are the people who ousted Makgashule's gang, and they were seen to be clean, or they were portraying that they are clean people, they run clean administration. There's this very serious allegation, and the EFF is saying, let the NPA prosecute these people, you know, or start with the investigation. And they must obviously vacate their position, one based on the ANC policy of when you are charged, because these are very serious allegations. And the NPA is dragging its feet, it's not doing anything. So the EFF has laid a formal complaint, a formal charge, and they have actually approached the National Council of Provinces as well to say that we can't just sit as government when there are these serious allegations against the premier and the speaker of the province, as well as the speaker of the capital city. You know, you can't just put that under without proper investigation.
It can't be business as usual.
Yes, it can't be business as usual. And I think they are doing their duty, one as the opposition in the Free State and nationally, but also for this are our resources. You understand? The EFF is acting at the best interest of the people of the Free State, which we know that is one of the provinces that is performing bad on almost everything.
Except metric.
Except what? Oh, the metric results. Yeah, were they number one or two?
They kick butt at metric.
So let's
give them a bit of credit.
No, we must give the youth a bit of credit for studying and being disciplined.
Sure.
But I think, again, the EFF has to be supported in pushing for the government to do the right thing. And we don't say they are guilty. We don't say they receive those bribes and kickbacks. The same spirit that is being used to investigate Palapala, to investigate Simelane, to investigate Zizi Kodwa, to investigate whoever is facing allegations of bribery and corruption, maladministration, it should be applied to these people as well.
Sure.
Why do we have a selective way of handling, you know, allegations of corruption and maladministration? And I think it's the right thing to do. I mean, there's almost in every province, every body or every second production is being accused of corruption and maladministration. And you can see that the former opposition party, the DA, who is now the partner in the GNU, it's quiet about things that they were normally very vibrant
about.
That
make the most noise about.
Most about, yes. Mm. But then it's left to the real opposition, because the DA is part of the government, they're supposed to be. But they leave it to controversies were part in the EFF, Economic Freedom Fighters, to can do their part. So they are actually doing their job as the official opposition party. It is going to be very interesting, because if the current GNU government continues to break and or ignore the laws of the country, whether it's prosecution, whether it's the public protector's office or what, then there'll be a problem because they're setting a precedent. We don't know how long will this GNU last, but they are setting a precedent whereby the NPA after a year or two will ask them, but why do you ignore that case when there's a new one with similar factors? You understand? So I think the NPA must get its house in order. Okay. I think what they should do.
Since you've dragged the DA into the segment, let's stay with the DA. John Steenhuisen, DA leader.
John Vuligate.
And Minister of Agriculture.
Yes, yes.
Did not make it to Russia for the BRICS summit.
What was he going to do there?
I don't know. Why is everyone else there?
No, well, look, when you take, when the president takes a delegation to an international forum, whether it's a summit, whether it's a UN, it depends on what are the issues there to be discussed and engaged on.
I'm sure agriculture would probably be a priority for entire BRICS.
Yeah, fresh. It depends who was on the delegation. Was it a priority? BRICS is in a formation state. Agriculture could be important, but it could be on the secondary phase of implementation.
Okay.
Right now, they are at the formation of policies. I don't know, but I'm saying if President Ramaphosa felt, you know, he still have a constitutional prerogative to say, no, but I don't need the Minister of Agriculture to can go to the BRICS summit for now. Let me leave this one. Yeah, but
anyway, so President Ramaphosa, in one of his addresses at the BRICS summit, speaks about how South Africa is an ally of Russia. And John Steenhuisen, Honorable Minister Steenhuisen, then tweets that, no, sir, Russia is your ally, not our ally.
Not our ally. And I don't know what is your and I. You think about the country, the ANC and the DA.
So what are your thoughts on this back and forth? One, should it have been on social media? Two, do you think that they've taken it for granted on discussing issues of foreign policy, that let's all be on the same page regarding foreign policy?
I think,
And two, there is still almost this not knowing our position in our relationship.
Yeah.
Because the DA insists you guys did not win an outright majority, therefore. But the ANC are saying, but we got the most votes, so we put together this party that you decided to dance in. So are the DA overstepping, given that they were told, guys, well, we are forming a GNU. Come form a GNU with us. We're not saying we're equal. We're not teeth.
even teeth sometimes is not equal.
Absolutely.
But
so right now the DA, if we're gonna speak in dental terms, are being the canine. They just want to bite everything. Whereas the Raposa is like, no, you sometimes must be a molar and a premolar. And chew slow.
Slow down. I mean, judge, Now, but let me tell you, there's three aspects into that.
Yes, sir.
One is a tweet. Mm. You know, if I was Ramaphosa, would have ignored it like he has done, but the ANC responded. It's a tweet, because if John Steenhuisen, the Honorable Minister of Agriculture of the Democratic Alliance, was serious about this, he would have made representation by the political party to government. They can table it in parliament to say, but don't drag the government of national unity into your friendship with Russia. So
are you saying the tweet was misguided?
It's misguided because...
Or rather, he should have addressed this in a different manner.
If it's serious.
Okay.
If it's serious, the DA would have taken a submission to the Speaker of Parliament or to the Minister of International Relations and Cooperation or to the Presidency. You know, Steenhuisen is the President or the leader of the DA.
Sometimes that takes a while, because you made a speech an hour ago. And I need people to know that, you know,
you are distancing yourself from that. And I will come to that.
What's the quickest way of doing that?
It's fine. If people are going to run the government on Twitter, that's the mess that we find ourselves in.
We all learned from Trump.
Yeah. Now, the second part of your question is then, who responds first to that tweet? It's Honorable Minister Gayton McKenzie of Arts, Sports and Culture to say to Steenhuisen, Steenhuisen, the problem with you is the president left you behind. So Gayton is playing it like a true sports person. He's playing like, you behave like a little child. That's because you were left out on this trip.
Yes.
You are crying. Yet when you went to China,
you were smiling with Xi Jinping.
You were just smiling with Xi Jinping, shaking hands. And right when he came back, he tweeted nice things about being in China and, you know, forming agricultural relations with China. So he's behaving really like a little brat. But also, another thing that Gayton McKenzie highlights, or that's what I'm thinking, is that you see this DA double standards, it's a problem because China has some of the worst atrocities when it comes to human rights. They are not a democratic state. You understand? It's a one-party state since ever. And it's okay to have the country like that. They are occupying Tibet. They are now telling Taiwan to say, hey, stop that nonsense. You are another province of China. And the DA is okay with that. But when it comes to Russia, just because of the historical relations of the African National Congress and the USSR, and I will explain that, and also the war with Ukraine at the moment, or with NATO. Now the DA wants to be part of the NATO. And I think that's where the problem is. But the ANC responded through their first Deputy Secretary General, Menomvula Mokonyane, who gradually... Yes, Mama Action gradually is doing international relations for Luthuli House.
Yes, sir.
And I liked her response. And this was a wake-up call for the DA. Memo Kwanyani says, the DA is missing a point. Part of the two things they have put on the table towards the proposal document, which we all know it was tabled by the DA to form the government of national unity. The ANC came in and for a change, I'm saying to the ANC, they played it well and nice, but they never said it. I never knew until Mama Action said it this week. International relations, as well as the military, were excluded from that discussion and that argument. And I think ANC was very smart to do that, to exclude international relations and the military from that GNU agreement, to say, we are the number one party, we are in charge, those two will remain in control. And for that matter, the international relations and the military are not part of that settlement agreement that the DA tabled. And so the DA must just shut up and let the ANC policy that is leading the country on foreign policy. And Fresh, this brings me to a point of saying, what informs our foreign policy? Greatly and largely, it is the historical background of the African National Congress as the ruling party. Look, they only lost power a few months back. But all along, the ANC internal policy has been informing our foreign policy. That's why the relationships with the countries that were friendly to or the anti-apartheid organizations or countries like the Scandinavian countries, the eastern part of Europe, Asia, Latin America, and some and most African states, the ANC maintained that relation. The ANC hasn't divorced or grown from the liberation movement that had relations. That's why they can't even condemn other African leaders or other countries that do wrong because of the historical background. And I think that's where, you know, the challenge the ANC is sitting with. They will still look at Zimbabwe, they will look at Zambia, they will look at Angola and other countries that house them, and they can't criticize or attack them when they do wrong. And again, I think a lot of people are making the mistake in the ANC to say, did we have a relationship with Russia or did we have a relationship with the USSR? And the Union of Soviet Socialist Republic, Russia, the current federation, was part of the USSR, including some of the Umkhonto Besizwe cadres. They were trained, guess where? In Ukraine.
Yes, sir.
You understand? So if the ANC is going to continue pushing this thing to say Russia was with us during this, which Russia? The current Federation State of Russia or the USSR, yes, with President Putin and the State of Russia, it has been clear. That one, there is no doubt that Putin was in the forefront of even training a lot of African guys. And also, you know, I personally know that Lindiwe Zulu, my former ambassador, the former minister, was trained in the USSR, where? definitely in Russia, the then one of the states. So I think we should start polishing the foreign policy to talk to current affairs and current needs, you understand, of the country. But the DA, I think they are fishing on small waters and rivers.
Do you think the DA will eventually cause an irreparable ruction in the GNU?
I have said it will do it, but they will do it smart and at a good time. They will do it towards the elections. First, the 2026 elections, the DA is going to go. Remember, at election time, we are not friends.
Yeah.
Understand? They will do it.
So are you anticipating we're in a marriage, but grand, I'm just making sure that I'm fine so that the day I say, okay, I'm walking away.
Yes.
I've accumulated what I need,
what I need to
sustain myself.
Exactly. I think that's how they are going to do it.
I'm speaking in terms that we divorcees can understand.
So this is a marriage between a marriage of convenience and how much wealth you can amass. And wealth is not only of money. It's having access to government information.
Yes.
It's having access to resources that you will need to run a campaign. It's very expensive to run a campaign. And the donors of political parties in South Africa, they are also getting strained now.
Sure.
Because it's the same cycle of people. Understand? So I think they will, but come 2029, should we arrive there when the GNU still exists, which I doubt. When after 2026, we'll see more cracks and damages. But should we go to the national elections of 2029? Trust me, on the last year, 2028, the DA will be out of government.
Because, you know, the days I get annoyed on behalf of President Ramaphosa that it's almost like he has to deal with this petulant partner and manage them and sometimes pander to the little tantrums. And a part of me feels like maybe you must tell them bye-bye.
No, but I've said to you, he can't, you see. Of marriage. President Ramaphosa went and married a slave queen called the DA.
No, but let me finish. Because a part of me feels you guys have so much in common, so much more in common, say, with an EFF and an MK. Are we saying that train has left the station and there's no chance?
It has.
That there can be talks.
Let me tell you, in my view, the train has left the station. And I'll tell you, it's mainly because of personalities. For as long as President Jacob Zuma is there, President Ramaphosa is there, and Julius Malema to some extent as leaders of these parties, for as long as these three people who have become arch enemies, politically, not in person, are there, this train will stay derailed. And the damage is deepening. You know, the chasm is getting bigger and bigger.
Especially with people jumping ship.
Yes, people jumping ship. There's floor crossing. And people are not floor crossing only when they even leave lucrative positions to show that actually where their alliance is. So I think it's too late for that. For as long as we have these leaders, who are former comrades, by the way. That's one part. But the other part is, I differ with you when you say there is so much in common between the ANC, MK, and EFF. The MK and the EFF, they have went left. They are extreme left parties. They've pronounced on Pan-Africanism. The ANC, it's a center party.
Sure.
The DA, it's center right. If you look at policies, let's not look at history.
Sure.
Let's not look at the color of the voters, the pigmentation. Let's look at reality, the policies of the ANC, which are capital, market orientated, and they are not socialists, they are not communists. They are, even if they've got their alliance with their communists, who are now showing the signs that the ANC has come out clear. Some of us have said it years back that the ANC, there's nothing socialist about it.
Sure.
You understand? Policy-wise and current affairs-wise, they are more aligned with the DA. And their differences with the DA are small than when you look at the bigger picture.
So they have more in common than they want to admit.
Than they want to admit. They've got more in common. I'm telling you, people must go and read their policies. Even if they are election manifestos, there's not much difference between the ANC and the DA. I mean, the DA goes and says towards elections, the people of Langa, the township people, the poor and of the poorest. Go and look at the ANC manifestos. They talk the same. But historically, Umkhonto we Sizwe, EFF, They are breakaways from the ANC.
So are you saying members of the ANC that are pro RET and pro we want our land now?
Yeah.
Are you saying they must forget it then?
They are marginalized.
Yeah.
And let me tell you how they are marginalized. And President Ramaphosa has handled that gang in the ANC or that faction of the ANC. And I wouldn't be surprised they are in majority.
Mm.
But what managed them is this thing that is called democratic centralism.
Mm.
You understand? You have put us into power. We are the leadership. We are 80 plus members of the NEC.
Mm.
We've got the veterans who are very comfortable with their looting there. And we've got 20 national working groups. People, you said you have empowered us to say we will make decisions on your behalf.
Mm.
If you don't like us, you'll wait for the next elections to remove us out of power, which is in 2027, 2028.
Mm.
But because of democratic centralism, that's why in going to bed or in marrying the DA, President Ramaphosa and his top seven, or at least they're top six now because of the passing of who passed on the top seven, some or the late DSG, Desi Duarte.
Oh, yes, yes.
Now, this top seven plus the other leagues heads, they are being given powers.
Mm.
So based on that, all these other RET forces, socialists, communists, that's why Solima Paila is frustrated now.
Mm.
They have no say. They can go to the media and make noise and scream and say we're betrayed. This is not what the ANC exists for. The DA is a racist organization. They can all go make noise, but there's nothing they can do because the constitution of the ANC gives powers to the president, to the top seven, to the national leadership, which is the NEC. The National Working Committee does the groundwork, informs the NEC. NEC makes a decision. That's why there was no consultation with the branches or the provinces when they went into bed with the DA.
Absolutely.
It's the same as getting married.
Mm.
When you get married, you look for a lover. And in all those that you have, what do? You said I'm marrying this one. Then what do? You bring your kids, you bring your family, you bring your uncles after. You have made a decision, and that's what the ANC has done. That's what President Ramaphosa has done.
Mm.
He said, I'm the one who's looking for a partner here. I'm going to choose my partner, and then I'll bring those two. I've elected my partner.
He said to the children, Gaza.
Yeah, let me come and inform you.
Here's your mother.
Here's your new mother. And that's what President Ramaphosa has done. And he did it wisely, knowing that there's nothing they can do.
And also that if I over consult on this one, it's going to take forever.
It's going to take forever.
And we have like a finite amount of time to put this GNU together.
But there was also a lot of anger during that time, and he was smart to do it fast.
Sure.
There was also a lot of anger during that time with President Zuma and people who left the ANC to controversies. There was a lot of anger. So during that period when people were still angry, with President Zuma and RET forces forming MK, he made a decision to say, you can't want me to go to bed with that person that you are angry with. So it gave him a little bit of power and a boost. In my opinion, in my view, for now, ANC members and followers, they are stuck with the marriage with the DA.
Sure.
And I don't see anything major happening
for
them to can shift from where they are. Because you look at the MPs, you look at the ANC cabinet members that President Ramaphosa has put in there, they are tamed. Understand? They are lame ducks. They will do as ordered. None of them has even once spoke, with an exception here and there of Panyaza Lesufi. But Panyaza was reacting to an attack by the DA. But you could see the minute he's one that is looks like he's choking the old ANC standpoint, he was called into Luthuli House. So none of these people fresh will ever challenge the status quo. No, I don't see it happening.
In fact, let's stay in Parliament while we're at it, because one of the other stories this week, remember how long ago was it that Parliament adopted a motion that diplomatic ties with Israel must be severed.
Yeah, it's...
And then nothing happened.
That is.
And then the EFF have raised it in Parliament now to say, but guys, we've decided.
Yes.
What's going on?
Yeah.
And it's only now we're being told that no, we'll know by the end of the year a way forward.
Well, look,
why do you think it's taken so long? Because Parliament decided that we're going to do this.
The country decided.
Yeah.
And it was voted into to save a diplomat. Actually, our ambassador was recalled with the staff and all that. So I also think it was part of, It was not an irrational decision. It was a rash decision. Remember, this happened after we had won the case at the International Criminal Court.
Sure.
And it has gone to other courts, and there's appeals and forth. So I think at that time, South Africa thought, we have this judgment from the International Criminal Court. We've got a foreign policy that is pro-Palestine. And we can, and we are a peace-loving country. We cannot condone a war, and therefore let these people go. But I think in hindsight, when they go back, and I always say, those who pulls the ropes, those who fund, manage, and control politicians, because I'm one of the people who believes that politicians are controlled. They called President Ramaphosa and whoever on the side and said, you are not going to do that. We are going to stall this thing. We are going to hold it back. It could be the imperialists, which is the Americans in this instance. It could be part of engaging in the GNU to say, but wait, slow down. Sure. And when you look at members of the GNU, if you leave the ANC or the pro-Palestine and influential ones, the Inkatha Freedom Party, the Democratic Alliance, the Patriotic Alliance, they are all pro-Israel.
Sure.
You understand? And they have pronounced on Israel. You know, so it's going to be very difficult for the ANC-led GNU to navigate that when the key members of the GNU, and IFP and the DA are very key members of the GNU.
Sure.
So it's going to be very difficult for the ANC to just ignore them. Even if they are leading and they're still in charge and control of the foreign policy. But you cannot ignore them because they may cause problems domestically.
Absolutely.
And I don't think the president or the ANC has the appetite to contest or irritate the first wife and the second wife of the GNU, the first wife being the DA, the second wife being IFP, because it will impact on them domestically.
Sure.
And I don't think they have the appetite. Just for Israel and Palestine, they're going to let it slide and keep quiet about it like they do with other things.
So the EFF saying, it's been a year, guys. Let's move. Do you think that genuinely concerned that it's been a year, or they're just
rattling the cage? They're rattling the feathers. They're rattling the feathers. The EFF is good in doing that.
Yeah.
And they're doing things differently as they promised this year.
Sure.
They're focusing on decisions that were taken in parliament that are not being implemented. They are criticizing everything that a decision has been made. This is putting the ANC into a political dilemma, because the decision was made by parliament, and parliament, even if it was made last year, led by the ANC, parliament represents the republic. It's a national decision. So in order for that decision not to be implemented, it must be parliament that goes and decides against it. But look, Fresh, the ANC is not going to do that. It's not going to be, they're going to ignore, and I'll tell you why. The ANC is back in power. They're in charge of the country, whether we like it or not.
Sure.
Whether they came via the back door. But they outsmarted everybody. They realized that we need these partners to get back into power.
Sure.
Whether they sold their soul or they compromised themselves or what, but they needed to sit in that position.
They played politics.
And yeah.
And that's what politics is.
And that's what politics is. Yeah.
Politics is managing your current status quo.
Exactly.
And if it means giving someone else a taste of the honey you've been enjoying.
Exactly.
So that they can move with you. Then you
they
that.
Can move with you. And
there's nothing unusual about what
exactly.
They
exactly. And they've done it successfully. Fully.
Absolutely.
The ANC remained in power. That was a master stroke. I mean, if you manage to convince the so-called educated, informed DA with all its monies and people who wrote the constitution and AfriForum behind them and Outer, if you manage to bring them here, do you think the DA one day soon will wake up and they lose all those cabinet positions? Never. Never. They won't do that. They are now in government for the very first time.
And they now have an opportunity to show beyond a shadow of a doubt, that look at our ministers delivering.
Delivering, yes.
Because this is all a campaign.
That's all they can do. Little they can do. Look at our ministers delivering.
It's a campaign towards the next election.
Absolutely. And therefore, the ANC is stuck with these people until they decide we have done enough, we have accumulated enough mileage, it's time for us to go. It's going to be them who decide.
On a different note, though, because some people are still upset at the ANC for working with
Democratic Alliance,
with the DA, and a lot of people didn't vote, snubbed the ANC, that I'd rather not vote than vote for another party.
Yes.
Do you think, given that there's a GNU, those people that didn't show up to vote will show up to vote now?
I think they will. I think to punish the ANC, they will.
Further?
I think the ANC is going to be punished further by its members mainly.
That's what
not
I'm
just voters.
That's what
they
I'm
are going to punish further to say, no, these guys have gone rogue and worse now. Because if you look and hear people, the
but
top
what
of
if
town,
the service delivery happening from the GNU? Do you think people would still punish them?
They will. You know why? To say that. And remember, people don't even vote for service delivery. They vote for the love of their political parties. And that's where the problem is. If people were voting for service delivery, trust me, they will vote for GNU again. In other words, nobody gets the outright majority because it looks like this thing is working. But I'm telling you, and I can bet on that, no matter how much the GNU delivers, the biggest loser in the next elections is going to be the ANC. Because the people are going to say, it is clear that you were failing the country. You going to bed, we'll punish you for going to bed with the DA, but we'll punish you even further to say, you sleeping with the DA and Inkatha actually benefited the people on the ground. So the people on the ground who never believed in politics, who abstained, not members of the ANC, general voters, will go and vote to say, no, we want to keep the status quo as it is. Understand? And the Action SAs and the other new formations or those that were swallowed and MK, they will grow. Action SA and MK will grow the next elections. They will definitely grow as the opposition to keep this. So people are going to lose in the ANC. They will lose further. Yeah.
Okay. Let's bring it to the city of Johannesburg. Oh. Our former mayor, Gwamanda.
Mayor number 8.
Kabelo. He's back in the news because he was arrested.
Yes.
For running a
Ponzi
scheme.
Yes.
A scheme.
Why is it called a Ponzi scheme? What does Ponzi mean?
Ponzi is the original guy that did this for the first time.
Oh.
Where he took money from Peter and then said to Paul, here's a nice big profit. I think the guy's name was Ponzi.
Oh,
so
okay.
They named subsequent scams
after
Ponzi.
Yes.
Hey, anyway. So the weird thing about the arrest of former Mayor Gwamanda is the fact that the warrant of his arrest was issued, May?
In May.
While he was mayor?
Yes.
But it's only last week that he was arrested?
Yes.
I mean, even...
He even handed himself over.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Even former Mayor Palatse stood up to say, now, man, you know, he might not be my favorite guy, but what is of this timing?
I actually thought Palatse is on the forefront of this.
She was. She's the one who blew
the whistle on this whole thing.
Yes.
But if you recall, Fresh, how this came up, one of the alleged victims of this scam that happened in 2011, 2012, by the way.
I think it was the funeral cover scam
Cover scam, yes.
Because people say all of a sudden they couldn't get hold of
these guys.
Directors. Yeah. And then they were told that people had passed away.
Yes. Even himself, Kabelo, yes. They said he died or he committed suicide.
Jiggy.
He's alive.
He's on TV as a mayor.
Of the biggest metro and the richest city in Africa. But
we live in a movie, eh?
No, but it's not really a movie. I think there's clumsiness into this whole thing because... Yeah. Look, if the warrant of arrest and because it's an investigation, I don't think it was a warrant of arrest. I think it was, I don't know what there's a term they use in the police to say, please come in for questioning, come and present yourself. Because a warrant of arrest, it means the police must go and fetch you. Don't think it was a warrant of arrest.
It's like a notification.
Yeah, of saying, go and there's investigation, allegations, bring yourself. But he said he was very busy, traveled overseas. Let me tell you why I say I don't think it was a warrant of arrest that's given to law enforcers to go and arrest a person. They knew where he lived.
Exactly.
His private house as well as the official house. Secondly, the office. They could have picked him up. But thirdly, for God's sake, he's a mayor. He's been driven by the cops. That's why Dr. Palatse is saying something is fishy here. This man, for the duration of, he was a mayor for a long time, I think almost a year or even more. So he was driven by police. The bodyguards are police, you know, VIP protection. And Joburg Metro could have arrested him. So I don't think it was a warrant of arrest of a wanted person who they don't know where to find him. But now when the pressure was hitting on after he vacated office, or maybe they were playing it politically, there could have been political political interference. Because now this story of seeing, oh, he hands himself over a week or two after he vacates the office as the mayor of Joburg, and there's a new mayor. And very quickly, the current mayor, Ntate Dada Morero of the African National Congress, was very quick, within less than a week, to place him on suspension, what is called special leave.
Sure.
And he applied the ANC step-aside rule, which I think Al Jamaa, the political party that
belongs to,
should have refused that. But I also think he's very confident that there is no case. He's on special leave. He's still in his salary and having his perks. And but I think they didn't want to rattle the new government of local unity in Johannesburg.
But should he have waited to be asked to step aside, though?
Well, look, ethically and normally, a person shouldn't do that. You understand? You excuse yourself and say, I'm taking leave. You would have done that. But how many of these people, Fresh, me and you, we spoke about it, how many of them are facing allegations of maladministration and corruption? How many?
But it almost feels like either they don't care or nobody advises them on perception management.
They don't handle perceptions well. And perceptions are very important in politics.
Absolutely.
You must manage. Actually, even in our private lives, once there's a perception, a negative perception about me in my private life, I will manage it very, very quickly. You understand? So I think politicians, they don't have PR people who manage it, or even their offices.
Or they don't care.
Or they don't care. They just say, it won't happen to me. I think it's more they don't care. Because they know what to do when the time arrives. You know, when the heat is on, look at what Kabelo did. He accepted the suspension. He went, I saw two media interviews, and the guy speaks very well. You know, I saw him on Dr. J.J. Tabane's show explaining himself, something that he could have done ages ago.
Sure.
And he only does it when the heat is on, when Dr. Palazzi, and I wanted to say to Dr. Palazzi, she left politics, man. She must leave this thing. But I think it's personal, because remember, Kwamanda replaced her.
Yes. No, someone else replaced her. Yeah, Kwamanda came in after that.
Yeah, but that was short-lived. Mm. The real mayor after Dr. Palazzi was
Kwamanda.
Yes. Mm. So that, I think that person who replaced her was short-lived. I think it was a car accident, or the person passed on or something like that. But it was short-lived. So Mpo Palazzi is on this case. I thought she had left politics, but it is not worth it. And I think Kabelo Kwamanda has decided not to challenge the suspension in order for stability in the city of Johannesburg.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, sir. Let's move to kind of where we're going from here.
I don't know.
Talking food. Food safety.
Food safety, yeah.
I think it's more food safety than food security, or the security of food and the safety of food. And let me tell you my concern right now. Because obviously we had the case in Soweto of the kids who died yesterday
is Kwandebele.
But if you look at what's been happening over the last week, every day there's kids falling sick somewhere else in a totally different township or province or town.
Yes.
Which for me then says there's either a batch of contaminated the brown dash, those
brown dash is my pit bull, man.
No, the brown dash are those, they look like knickknacks, but they're not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's these chips that come in a long tube.
Oh, the long tube. Oh,
then,
okay.
Then they're pre-packaged.
Okay.
In spaza shops. Those are the brown dashes the kids who passed away ate. And then you hear a story of kids who bought acha from another school kid who also fell sick.
Yeah, yeah.
To me, maybe I'm too much of a conspiracy theorist. It smells like there's a third hand here trying to push a certain narrative and direction, because there's no way you can have so many kids falling ill from food they ate.
It's cool. Yeah, and it's all
at the same time.
At the same time. And in almost all provinces.
But that's what I'm saying. That for me, it seems very orchestrated. Very, there's a third hand at play here.
Fresh, I will buy
it, it can't be coincidence.
I will buy into your conspiracy theory. And I'll tell you a few reasons why. One, the spaza shops have been there in the townships for many years. And even spaza shops ran by foreign nationals. Mm. They are not new. Well, the ones that are ran by foreign nationals have increased at the moment.
Yeah.
But and we have ate those things, man. I've grabbed some snacks and those biscuits for my kids and my nieces and nephews.
In fact, I remember the partner of the owner of the spaza shop that was shut down, Kosoweto, saying that if the problem is the food we are selling, our children also eat that food.
Yes.
And they were fine.
Then they were fine, yeah.
Which look, then says, maybe there is a third-handed play here.
Let me bring my political background into that question.
Yeah.
When the Black First, Land First movement was formed, in 2016 or 17, I think it was in 2017, the BLF, one of the founding documents that Andile Mngama presented, in what they call the Black Agenda,
sure.
The BLF spoke in that document about one of the biggest threat that we must guard against as a nation, it's food security and safety.
Yes.
You know, it was
and
a very...
water
yeah, well, food was part of that. And that's when I had given an input to say, our water reservoirs are in the hands of the minority. A few black, few white males own the dams and the reservoirs. The Nomvula Mokonyane had just been the Minister of Water Affairs that time. They issued that report. And we mentioned that. The second part is this food that is happening in Kondwa, you can see, as you say, it's well orchestrated. It's running from province to province. And it's only affecting black people. Only. Somebody will say only the poor ones because they eat from spaza shops and there's no spaza shops in white camp. There's a white squatter camp in Tshwane. You understand? And they obviously have spaza shops and eat there. But obviously it's not black people selling. It's not foreign nationals. So for me, the conspiracy theory of saying there may be a third force to this. If you want to wipe off a nation, you target its youth. You target its children.
But
you
is
feed
this,
them.
No, but is this about wiping out or about creating a certain narrative?
Or creating a havoc. Or creating a havoc whereby...
It's domestic terrorism.
Yes, yes. Whereby, and it has started happening, depending on how people look at the bigger picture of terrorism, it has started happening that the people in townships where these things are being, they react. Then they start targeting foreign nationals. Even the media start saying, spaza shops owned by foreign nationals. You understand? Spaza shops owned by foreign nationals. And we allow those foreign nationals to own those spaza shops in our houses, in our townships and our backyards. But the question then becomes, who is the supplier of this food? Who is the manufacturer of this food? The municipalities that are failing, we can't expect municipalities that can provide basic services to now extend and provide that. Health is a basic service and it's their responsibility. But we know that these municipalities are failing and are collapsing. Why do we expect them to can add more on issues of food inspections? And I've heard from scientists this week, they say they don't know whether it's a chemical that causing this thing, or and other people are saying it's expired food reaction. I've learned 2 months back that expired food doesn't actually kill.
I was going to say, it might give you an upset tummy, but I don't know if it will kill.
Yeah, expired, it depends when did it expire. But when it goes, do you understand that people die? And not even in one of them, the state has come back and said there was poison found there, whether it's poison that was chemical reaction from the factory or poison. You know, a lot of spazas and shops, they have rats. Obviously, where there's food, you'll have rats. If you look at the whole of Alexander and Soweto and all that, or is it the rat poison that, what you call it, that shop owners or spaza owners are using to do what? To target rats. And a rat may eat a poison and transfer it to a packet of food when it moves there. You understand? Then it contaminates whatever it's in that bag. So it's all the management and security. But I like what, again, you know, the EFF these days, forever on my lips today. I looked during the course of this week, the gentleman who's acting on Gwamanda's position, Dr. Mtini Chwagu, who is the MMC of Safety and Security in Gauteng, is now acting on Gwamanda's position, was saying, and I think I would subscribe more to that, Fresh, because this thing is mushrooming. Let us shut out down all these parsers and clean them up, regulate them well, and start all over to say they comply with the cleanliness, the safety, and all that.
Yeah.
I know there will be an outcry from the community to say, you guys are sitting in your comfortable position. I can't close my spaza because it feed my kids. But Nkini Chwaku said something very critical during the course of the week. He says, since the incident of Naledi a year ago, they've been calling spaza owners. Sometimes this spaza, you know what is happening with this? Because he explained something very interesting.
Mm.
You remember, you need a license to run a spaza, sure, or a permit, a certain special kind of. One of the requirements there is that you need a South African ID. So the spaza at the Department of Small Business or at the municipality, it's registered in Fresh's name.
Oh, yes.
Who is the landlord? You are the one who has the permit.
Garage.
You own the garage or the kiosk or the tech shop. So it is legitimate. It has papers. But then you sublet it to a foreign national. So it is. Who are the people who react when the government wants to enforce the law? Who are they? It's the owners. Because it's their bread and butter.
Sure.
But they don't look at the bigger picture. They don't look at the picture that if you don't do that, the committee may come and burn your house.
Absolutely.
The committee may, you know, kids are dying and your house or your spaza, the fingers are pointing at you. So the engagement, we need this engagement at a national, you know, discourse. And I think, you know, when I raised that with you, I wanted to hear your view. I think it's a crisis. I think the government must act now. They must declare this an emergency and a serious crisis.
What does acting now look like?
Look, use the resources you are having to aid the local municipalities.
Mm.
Understand? You use the soldiers during lockdown to do to enforce the laws in the townships. Mm. Use the soldiers not to and enforce military war, but to go and help and clean up. To take this, in. The military has some of the best health facilities. We are one of the armies in the world that has the lack of health services.
Sure.
Use that. Use laboratories from private sector. Invite the private sector. You know, why will the private sector be important into this? You mentioned one of the chips brand earlier on, Knickknacks. Knickknacks is losing money because of fake products or counter products. They approach them as government, approach this private company, food suppliers, whether it's Tiger Brands or whoever, and say, we need help, step in. Because some of these things, they are countering your genuine products that have been tested. Help with the resources, help with the laboratories, because these companies, private companies, they've got labs that test their food before they are packaged. Invite them. And that's what I'm saying. It's a national discourse at the moment where the national government must step in. My favorite minister, Stella Ndabeni, to my surprise, she's very quiet about this whole thing because it is in the core of her department, small business. She's very quiet. She was supposed to be leading this process actually with health and with COCTA. Understand? To say, small business, go and engage with PASA owners, call a symposium or a meeting or whatever, to say, guys, let's work together. Now, very good, because you want to make money, you want to render a service, but our children must be healthy. And this thing of them going to funerals and giving speeches and talking nicely.
And then doing inspections and raids.
And raids.
Just for a week.
Yes, then
and
it does.
And then we go back to...
We don't have the police. We don't have the inspectors. We have well-trained, well-equipped military. Use them to clean up and help the government to regulate and clean up these spaza shops.
Would you say, over and above the lack of political will to fix a lot of things that are wrong in a lot of our cities that have become overrun, there's inner city decay, etc. Don't you also feel that we've allowed lawlessness to become so much a part of our fabric across the board?
And it's surprising when the law is applied.
That it's a runaway train almost.
Yeah.
That lawlessness has become who we are day to day. You know, whether it's people driving on the emergency lane, getting to work, because now I'm late, I'm going to use the emergency lane. I'm more special than everyone else.
Yeah.
Waiting for a four-way stop.
Fresh, we are in Joburg now, and when I came this morning, I came via the, in order to arrive timely in the studio, and I saw more for the so-called former street, what do you call them, beggars and all that, controlling traffic, than Metropolis.
So as Jason Goliath calls them, a hobo cop.
Does he call them that? Anyway, I saw them and I think they are doing a splendid job. But there is we are lawless. We have become a lawless nation.
But isn't it wild that you are having the homeless directing traffic?
Directing the rich.
Exactly.
Directing them because of the well-off. He's directing the well-off. Because
and that we listen to them and yes. We abide by... We
by
trust,
what he says. Yeah, we trust him more than the non-way, the stop sign. Because when the traffic lights, you're a typical South African, you even call them robots. when traffic lights are not functioning, we all know from basic education of driver's license, which is a learner's to say, it becomes a four-way stop.
Sure.
But because we are lawlessness, we are impatient, we are arrogant, and we think we are better than us. No, comes a so-called hobo, a homeless person, who has sat there every day saying, you know, these people are so angry, they're not giving me my 20 cents anymore. Let me direct traffic. And we listen. The majority of the people listen. The majority of the people defend those processes. That's what lawless. Let me tell you, I used to think racism is the biggest threat and corruption in South Africa. Lawlessness. Because a lawful country or enforcing the law will fight racism, will fight corruption. But because we don't care about enforcing the law, it has become a norm for people to break the law and they get away with it. Yeah. And that is very dangerous. It has become a norm to say people don't renew their discs and their driver's licenses. They don't renew their spaza shop licenses. And it's okay. We live with it. Municipalities are crying of lack of resources. People are not paying rates and taxes. It has become a norm. So we're becoming a lawless country. And it is because the government... understand?
You bridge electricity and you turn around and say... But I can't afford it.
I can't afford it, yeah.
But for you, it's fine. But I must take it.
Because you know nothing will happen to you.
But that's what I'm saying. There's a lawlessness stroke entitlement that if we don't nip it in the bud, it's going to become all that we are.
We failed to nip it in the bud long ago. I mean, I drive sometimes when I take my daughter to school in Lodi. I might drive through the so-called military area. You know, I see in the cities, a lot of electric poles have collapsed. And it's because of copper theft. People who keep, they break that pole and steal the copper. Now, I see those things have collapsed in a military zone. Which is supposed to be the most guarded place in the Republic. And those poles have collapsed right inside the military zone or in Tabatswani, that whole area of Swartkop, Tabatswani. All those poles have collapsed. Now, if people, whether you call them petty thieves or what, can go and cut poles in a military zone, what about in a normal area whereby they are starting to collapse bridges by you know, taking a pick and hammer to break a bridge in order to access the metal that is within the bridge or the traffic lights. By the way, most of the traffic lights, it's not because there's no electricity, it's because they've been broken down.
Yeah, so that I can direct traffic and make money from tips.
And anyway, we are a failing state. And people are saying, no, it's not that gloom, it's not that bad. People don't see things now, that what we are encouraging to happen now, it will catch up with us in the next 5 years.
Sure.
If we don't enforce the law. You know, it's other people must abide to the law, must respect the law. And if they don't, it is the duty of the state and the government to enforce the law, no matter how small it is. And I think that's the challenge we are faced with, that if we have accepted that taxi drivers can drive on an emergency lane. And it's okay. Even police wave at them, and don't do that, go back to the line. You drive with your private car in emergency lane. You get stopped, you get a fine. Taxi drivers, they don't. And if they get fines, do they ever pay them? Is there enforcement of impounding people who break the law? You know, sometimes when I walk around parkings, I check people's discs. I just check. And
you have a lot of time on your hands.
No, I just walk and I'm like, let me see, this guy is nice. And I can tell you, I found that most of the vehicles I've passed, they've got invalid discs.
Yeah.
And it's okay. The person drives every day on national roads without a valid disc for a vehicle to be on the road. It's lawlessness in the country, and we must start enforcing it.
Absolutely. Let's, before we wrap up with BRICS and the summit, Mozambique, election results, what on earth is happening? Why is it taking so long?
I'm scared.
What a one.
I'm scared of that. You know, the elections have passed months ago.
Is it months or weeks?
Weeks ago. The SADC, the delegation that they send, the observer mission,
sure.
They're divided into half. You understand? On one side, Botswana, Zambia, and the other. On the other side, it's South Africa, Zimbabwe, and the other. And they're divided. One, Frei Limo has been declared. The party that has been ruling Mozambique since the independence from Portugal has been declared the winner. The other opposition parties, there were even independent candidates.
Yes, there was,
A lot of them who did very well, especially that RENAMO has been weakened by the emergence of independent candidates. But the Mozambicans are saying, no. These were not free and fair elections, and Frei Limo did not win. Actually, the main dispute is not even about free and fairness. It's about the rigging of politics. And the observer mission of SADC, which consisted of six countries mainly, which are, you know, the neighboring countries or friends of, they are divided to say, no, but these results, what has been published is not right. And SADC and IEC have gone, you know, to declare, to say, no, Frei Limo has won and they are the government of the day. You know what is my fear? I've lived in Mozambique for 2 years and I've traveled at all, and we know the history of what happened for 10 years. Anyway, there has been skirmishes in the northern part of Mozambique,
sure.
The province called Cabo Delgado at the moment. There's been a war. I mean, there's Botswana, South Africa, and I don't know which other country, defense or Rwanda, that are sitting there to can try and stop the war. My fear is this may escalate into another civil war in Mozambique. And especially that the SADC member states are divided about the results.
Absolutely.
You know, if they were having a common position, they will have to make sure that the SADC law enforcement is there or a military is there to gain aid, whatever the government is. And I don't want to say it's Frei Limo, but the fact that they are divided, for me, it's seriously concerning to say, how do you put an observer mission? And SADC is doing this for the second or the third time now. Remember, there's been a lot of elections where they ignore the report of the observer mission. To say this could not be right.
So what would you rather happen? That they are divided the way they are, which means then someone was doing their job.
Yes.
Or would you rather there's a report that's going to be ignored anyway?
No, first, if people were doing their job, and you must also look at what the citizens of that country are saying. It could not be 50-50, could not be the majority, maybe it's 40-60, but quite a huge number of citizens of the Republic of Mozambique are saying these are not the real results. Now, it is the citizens plus an observer mission from a development, you know, a body of the region, which are saying, but this is not fair. You can ignore that. You can ignore those ones, but you are also ignoring the plight of the citizens and the laments of the citizens. I think they should have rerun the elections in Mozambique for peace sake. You know, sometimes delaying things is okay, but rerun the elections. And it will bring much more longer peace and stability. Look, we know that politicians are crooks. They may rerun them and come back with the next results. Then they can go back to the people and say, "Aye, but you are crazy. We have rerun the elections or we have recounted." And bring a different delegation of observers.
And let's see if the result will stay the
same. And let's see if the results. Bring another, you know, new heads, new brooms, and see if the results are the same. If I was in that position, that's what I will do.
Sure.
Even the IEC delegation that was running these elections, change those people or change the IEC that you have appointed. Mozambique has friends all over the world. They are the members of SADC. They are the members of the African Union. Bring a different IEC or bring a different delegation. And if the results are the same, you are saying to the people, but you see, don't just ignore the people. Don't just say, no, we are implementing the Frei Limo government. But it's very difficult in Africa or anywhere in the world, actually, to for the party in power to just relinquish power. Look, the ANC did not challenge the elections and what, but they didn't relinquish power. They just did it peacefully and strategically.
Yeah.
They brought in those that were their enemies to say, come on and give us power back. You do it differently, you do it strategically. And
absolutely.
I think in the Mozambican case, the government, the regional body, SADC, is not doing justice to the Mozambicans.
Yes, sir. Let's wrap up with the BRICS summit. What yes. are some of your observations, concerns, musings even?
It's wrapped up. Look, I think it was a great success.
Sure.
Russia had prepared very well and long for this.
Didn't you, just watching Vladimir Putin, he looked like he was in his element.
Body language.
His body language. Yeah. Look like I'm unbothered. Yeah. Yes, there's a war on one front.
Yeah.
There's sanctions on another front.
And there's a warrant of arrest over my head.
But I'm here with my friends.
Right? Yeah, and everybody's
you
here.
You can't touch me. Yes. You got an air of...
He feels
very empowered.
I did. I mean, I think President Putin and Russia as a state, they've demonstrated that they are a superpower.
Sure.
You know, whether we like it or not, whether we are friends with them or not, they've demonstrated. But also, fresh, Russia, despite the fact that they are the current chair, they've taken over now, and they'll be handing over to Brazil next year. Despite that fact, they have worked so hard to get rally enemies of the West or people who were the in between with the West.
Guys who were called rogue.
Yes, yes. And then to rally them to can come and form part of this, whether as guests or as new applicants.
True.
And that part, it has worked for them. But they had also, under sanctions, used whatever resources in their hands, media-wise, worldwide, to talk about this BRICS over time. They've done very well. But the other thing that I looked at, as you speak of the body language of President Putin, one of the things that people don't observe in protocol, you know how are people sitting or flex-hanged diplomatically in protocol? It's normally in alphabetical order.
Yeah.
There's something that I observed, and that's Botsang. In this instance, you are supposed to have the BRICS members. It will be Brazil sitting. Mm. And then comes I think it's India and South Africa will always sit there because we are S. R then comes after S. Okay.
No, yes, it will be Brazil, China,
yes.
India,
yes.
Russia, then South Africa.
Yes. Mm. That has been the practice. Mm. And it's because diplomatically they use alphabetical order. And it's I don't say it's supposed to be like that, but also on the summit, you will also have the country that was host before sitting there to the country that they remember it was South Africa.
It's a handover.
Mm. Then you will have Brazil sitting next to each other. In this instance, it didn't happen. And these are small things that the President Putin was perpetually and mainly sitting next to Jinping. You know, at some stage, President Ramaphosa was giving his closing remarks, and I could see there, and cameras were really doing that injustice or justice. They will focus on President Putin and Jinping talking and exchanging notes. You know, it will be looking like somebody saying to me, what is this one saying, explaining to me and all that. I observed that body language. That's one element. But during the course of this BRICS summit in Kazan, remember what happened? There were terrorists attacked in Turkey,
yes,
which is one of the new applicants. And
incidentally, Turkey is also a member of NATO.
Yeah, so that's another part. Like I said, I wouldn't trust Turkey on a serious note.
I was about to ask you, but can we trust Turkey and the intentions?
I know.
Or are they a Trojan horse?
They are a Trojan horse. I wouldn't trust Turkey. We are a member of NATO. Yes, BRICS is open to everybody. It's an economic bloc, but Turkey is playing double standard.
Yeah, because NATO is at war with Russia.
Yes. And then there's an attack in Turkey. Sadly, so people were killed, and their SWAT did a very good job. They saved life. But then the president of Turkey had to leave the meeting, the summit, to rush home because there were national crises. But there's another observation that I did with the BRICS summit. Saudi Arabia, who are in my book some of the most untrusted nation on earth and traitors, and that cannot be trusted. Where was the head of state in Saudi Arabia? In the middle of this. Guess where? He was visiting the United States. And they have applied to be members of the BRICS bloc. They are being seen as, you know, role players in the Middle East crisis. And they can play a pivotal role. No, there's a BRICS summit. You want to be a member of BRICS. In the middle of the summit of BRICS, you go and you visit the United States. For what? when there's this important thing, when the United Nations Secretary General is actually in Kazan addressing the BRICS summit. So that's one of the observations I've made. But in the middle of this whole thing, something very interesting happened. All countries that were there, South Africa obviously being in the forefront of the peace in the Middle East, they spoke about peace. And most of the BRICS, that's the other advantage we have. Most of the BRICS member states are peace-wanting countries. They are all talking of, majority of them. So guys, can there be peace in the world so that we can trade very well, okay? In the middle of this whole thing, while the United Nations Secretary General, what is his name? Antonio, is it Antonio?
Guterres.
Yes. You know, I listened to his whole address, very positive address and all. And he went and said, actually, after the UN and since the formation of the UN, BRICS has become a very important economic bloc of the developing states, and they deserve that. But he also mentioned that, remember, the United Nations was formed for two major things, peace and security. And he says, once we fight poverty, imperialism, and neocolonialism of these so-called developing countries, it may bring peace in the world, and which is the purpose of BRICS. So when I look at it, BRICS may, if things goes well, BRICS may become the replacement of the United Nations, because the UN has rules and laws that are cannot be enforced. It talks of, you know, we must have a consensus before we move on and things like that. But it's also the advantage of moving the focus on the West dominating the world. The economically, militarily as well, although BRICS is not talking big on military, but five or six member states of BRICS, Russia, India, China, Ethiopia, or Egypt, what, Iran, they have some of the top militaries in the world. They may not be talking wars and military, but they are big in military. So their focus is it's an economic bloc that is going to focus on, they call them countries of the South. It started as the South-South Cooperation. It's developing countries. It will grow. It's having its strength. But in the middle of the UNSG addressing the BRICS summit, something very interesting happened that I also observed. When he was talking about the war there, you know, a former Israel Defense Force general who became an advisor, national security advisor to at least five of Israel's former prime ministers, except Benjamin Netanyahu, came out and say, actually, the United Nations is a toothless dog with its courts, like the ICC, the ICJ, because yes, there are laws, they are good laws, but they are not implementable on the ground. And apparently this
man... And what's the point then?
And apparently he has been saying that. He is one of the biggest critics of Benjamin Netanyahu. He has called him to say he's the biggest risk to the world. He doesn't listen to anybody. I mean, this is a former general and national security advisor in Israel, and saying Benjamin Netanyahu is a threat to the world. And because he knows that the laws of the ICC, the ICJ, the UN laws and regulations are toothless. They are useless. They are good on paper and in court, but to put them into practice on the ground, you need the military. Only the military can force Israel to stop what it's doing, not the courts, not the court papers. Now, this is a general from Israel Defense Force, or former retired. And apparently, I want to go and read more about him. He's well-respected in diplomatic circles. You know, imagine a former military general becoming respected by diplomats. So the man has a balance. You know, so you know, those are some of the interesting things that I've observed. But I think it was a very, very successful summit. You know, thumbs up to Russia. I've told you during the course of the week when we had our tea that South Africa, why am I breaking news that I'm not allowed? But anyway, I'm an independent analyst. South Africa is getting a new ambassador from Russia.
Oh, yes. Is it Kunja, who is the old ambassador? Not Lavrov.
Lavrov is the
UN guy.
Is the UN guy. Yeah. Yes, yes. But the ambassador is not coming back after the BRICS summit.
I'm told he's getting a promotion back home.
I don't know, but I think he's so close, and he's a very close ally of President Putin. And he's former in the army as well. So I think we're getting a new ambassador. Well, I'm told we're getting a new ambassador, and if he's going to be here in the next week, week or two.
Sure.
And me and you, we still have a new work to do now to go and rebuild new relations with the new BRICS ambassador. But on a lighter note, I observed something. The president would even when he's in diplomatic, remember the BRICS summit is a diplomatic engagement, you know, and he still walks like a military spy.
No, he walks like a cowboy.
But you know why he works like that?
Yeah.
He swings only one hand. That's how they were trained. That's how the Russian military and the spy are trained. If you are a civilian, but you only swing one hand, you can't walk like that. The other hand that you are using to shoot or to fight, your strong hand, must never move.
Ah.
They are trained like that.
Oh, wow.
And he adopted that. Imagine when he was young, being trained as a spy. He still walks like that today. You must check. He only swings one arm when he walks. The other, and it's the indoctrination that, but man, the man is no longer carrying a firearm, but he still walks like that, swinging one arm because the other one is ready.
Must always be ready to draw.
Must be ready to can pull a firearm and fight. And I just observe those things that this man used to be in military boots and camo. Now he's in suits and nice ties, and he still walks like he's prepared. He can draw a firearm. I observe everything. But thumbs up to Russia. Thumbs up to BRICS member states. We came to the party. People like Dr. Iqbal Seif, they represented us well in that media and business industry. And I don't know which normal South African will be against BRICS at the moment.
Absolutely.
But I think we're doing very well as a nation fresh. So those are my, you know, few matters that I've collected. But it will be important for South Africans, law, international relations students to go and just read and inform themselves regarding the BRICS resolution. It's absolutely a very interesting document that has mapped up a path for the future of the world, you know, whether it's economically, financial transactions, food safety, and all that. I think the document, it was well researched work. And my former colleagues, diplomats around the world, they've done a great job.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And we're done for the day.
Oh, thank you, brother man.
Where do we find you on social media? Where do we support you?
Botsangm@gmail.com and on WhatsApp 082-485-9100. And then on social media handles, which is improving very well, thanks to you and your skills, at Botsangm. By the way, with this news, we have decided before you came to donate actually one of the copies of my biography to this studio.
Where do we get this book?
People can actually WhatsApp me on 082-485-9100. I will still deliver countrywide at a cost, but if it's in Gauteng, it's free. So if they WhatsApp me there, or they go on social media and order one.
Life with a question mark. What would we find in life with a question mark?
You will find everything that you wanted to know about this rebel called Botsang, you know, a rebel with a cause. And I did have a cause. I said my cause is to inform, to educate, and to make sure that people live their lives from an informed position, whether internationally or domestically in politics. Although that's what I've captured.
Although your uncle would probably call you a rebel without a pause.
I must ban him. I don't know what can I do for him not to watch the show. He's back at his criticizing way. But I told you during the week about his idea of us fundraising, because we are taking a toll on the show now. It's milking you.
No, maybe we'll do that. Maybe we must actually have people. We must do a fundraiser.
Fundraiser, yes.
For the show, so we stop doing it out of our own pockets.
Well, I must really tell the viewers and followers of this show that you have been carrying it, you know, financially. You have been doing everything to make sure it happens. And I just feel like it's taking a toll on your finances, constraints and all that. And if we are going to continue like this, my friend, this show will bankrupt you. and people will say, but Botsang Juki's man, why did he contribute?
But it's power to the cause, so.
Yeah, but
sometimes the calling is bigger than what the pocket allows.
Yeah. No, it's fine, Fresh, but let's look at the fundraising. There are a lot of people who have said they can donate to the show. So if maybe Kelet or the show producer can look into that. Those who want to, even if they do it anonymously, to can help us run the show, and or else we're going to wake up one Saturday morning and we are like, no, we are not going there, guys.
Yeah, because the lights are off.
Yeah.
We can't afford to pay the lights. Botsang, thank you very much, brother.
Thanks, brother.
We'll
Fresh.
See you in a week.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you very much. I actually enjoyed the topics today.
It was amazing. It was a dope chat.
As I said at the beginning, it was an action-packed week politically. Yes,
And hopefully you've enjoyed the week that was, the movie that was geopolitics this week. Another episode of Wow What a Week, hashtag Politics with Botsang Modimo Amemuyilwa. We're coming to you from Discover TV in Four Ways, Johannesburg. And we are part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Please remember to share, like, subscribe. Tell your mom, tell your grand, tell your uncle to tune in every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Shout out to Trevor at Pezulu Works and also to Otis the Flow Fraser for all of our imaging. Pezulu Works do the cinematography. If we look good, it's Pezulu Works. If we don't look good, it's our fault. Shout out also to Keletso Modisa King, our executive producer. Till next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.